You're listening to the Illustration Hour podcast, an interview podcast where I talk to illustrators, art directors, and agents about the craft and business of illustration. My name is Julia Dufossé, and I'm an editorial and commercial illustrator based in Chicago. And I'm chatting with creatives within the world of illustration to learn about their process, the challenges they faced along the way, and how to succeed as an illustrator today. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to this brand new episode of the Illustration Hour, the show where I share stories of people who create for a living. I'm Julia Dufossé, your host and an illustrator and designer based in Chicago. I hope everyone is having a good summer. I know this can be a busy time for creatives. I also know that you might be going through a bit of a lull in your work, in which case I would like to tell you to keep your head up and keep going, even if it means doing personal projects. And my guest today talks a lot about personal projects and pushing yourself in that way. Anyway, next week I will be going on a short vacation with my wife and family, but do not panic. There will be a brand new episode of the Illustration Hour out as usual on Monday morning. And for those of you who are new to the show, I upload new episodes every Sunday night, so you should be able to access the newest episode of the show in the early hours of Monday if you're in the Europe or in the US, which is where most of my listeners are from. So the other piece of news is that every Tuesday, I send out a newsletter. It's called Art Club. It's really great. And if you want to support the show and if you like the content, you should subscribe to it. And you could do that by going to illustrationhour.com/newsletter. And remember to leave us a review or rating on iTunes if you listen on an Apple device. It really helps us out. iTunes is a huge search engine for podcasts. So please, if you have the time, please consider leaving us a review and or a rating. Okay, so today I have a very special guest on the show and someone I really admire both as an artist and a businesswoman. Mary Lou Four is a French illustrator and designer who works out of London. She has a signature style that is colorful, cheeky, and delightfully irreverent. Mary Lou has worked with some big clients like Google, Nike, and Apple. More recently, Mary Lou hosted her first solo exhibition, a show called Nobody's Baby, featuring nude women in provocative poses. This and her female-centric work has established Mary Lou as a modern voice on issues of femininity, the female body, and our voyeuristic culture when it comes to women's bodies. During this conversation, we talk about how Mary Lou went from having zero clients, zero experience, and zero contacts to becoming a successful commercial and editorial illustrator. She shares the struggle she faced at the very beginning, defining her style, finding clients, and negotiating a fair deal for herself. We also talk about why it's important to stick to your beliefs and defend your stylistic choices as an illustrator, and how Mary Lou did this when she started. And Mary Lou also shares some really valuable advice about quoting prices, negotiating, and making sure you get what you deserve for your illustration work. So you'll get tons of insight into how Mary Lou positions herself in the crowded creative industry and the choices she's made along the way to continue thriving. You can find Mary Lou on her Instagram at MaryLou4 and on her website, MaryLou4.com. And I will also list those in the show notes for today's episode. And the comprehensive show notes for this episode, including all the links and details of what we talked about, will be on our website as always. They are at illustrationhour.com/4. That's the last name. It's always like that. It's always the last name. So illustrationhour.com/4. So without further ado, here is my talk with Mary Lou Four. Mary Lou, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really happy to talk with you and learn more about your process and your work. So the first question I like to ask illustrators who come onto the show is to ask them what they say when they're talking to someone who's not an illustrator and they ask you, what do you do for a living? What do you usually say?
Well, jokingly, I'll say that I draw naked women, but then I'll try to explain it in a bit more detail. But usually I just say that I illustrate for different types of projects, for editorial projects and campaigns and personal projects and product design, and then give a few examples of some of the stuff that I've done. And I tell them that I specialize in character design and a bit of handwritten typography as well.
Do they ever not really get what you do?
Oh yeah, all the time. Yeah. I still have friends who say that they still don't understand how that's my job and how like I can just draw all day and I get paid for that and that's actually what I do for a living. But mm-hmm. I kind of get it because it's a bit like for people who don't have a job in the creative industry as well, sometimes I feel it can be a bit more of a like it's kind of like a weird job for them to have because mm-hmm. especially when mm-hmm. you're freelancing because you're so in charge of your own time and in charge of your planning, so then it's like a lot of freedom compared to maybe some other jobs. So
yeah. So most of your clients come from like they're big commercial brands like Nike, yeah. Spotify, Apple. Do you also do a lot of editorial work?
Yeah, I do some. I do less editorial work than, let's say, campaign projects. Mm-hmm. But I do have a few magazines that I work for and do little spot illustrations for. And I like editorial work because I like printing and I like having like a physical objects and having it made as into something. But yeah, I do some, but it's not my main like part of my clients.
Is that by choice or?
I guess it just happened that way. The thing is, because I started working with bigger brands, I think once you work on a big project with my first big brand was Google, once that happened, it's sort of usually other big brands then contact you because they've seen your work and they've seen that, you know, Google trusted you on this project. So they kind of automatically want to work with you. Mm-hmm. So it sort of was, it happened that way. It wasn't really planned. So yeah.
And do you want to do more editorial work or are you happy with the kind of, with doing mostly commercial work?
Well, I like editorial work. I'm more into the idea. I like the idea of having things printed and made, and that's something that's mm-hmm. maybe lacking a little bit in some of my projects. So I'd love to go more into like packaging or even like window mm-hmm. display or creating like a huge mural for, I don't know, like an event or something like that. I like the idea of having like a physical result instead of digital.
Yeah. Yeah. But you don't feel ambivalent about doing mostly commercial work. That's something I was talking about with other people, that there could be kind of a little bit of a stigma about commercial work sometimes in the creative industry.
It's a tricky balance to get because as much as like obviously you need commercial work because they're big projects with big brands. But I am trying to find a good balance between that and more personal work and spend more time creating, you know, personal series, creating more prints for my shops and, you know, then aiming to do more like exhibitions and things like that, because mm-hmm. there is as much as I don't want there to be, there is a big difference between my commercial work and my personal work mm-hmm. because clients always have fears and so many feedbacks on little things that you end up, you know, doing something that's not exactly what you would have done. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's narrowing though. Like I used to have a lot of projects like that, and now I still have some, but I also do now have projects for big clients where I can actually do something really in my style. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's finding the right balance.
Yeah, I think that comes with experience probably. The more experience you are, the more you get freedom also to do what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I want to talk more about the beginning and how you got your start. So you graduated from LESAG in Paris mm-hmm. With a master's in art direction and graphic design in 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, that's yeah. it. Yeah.
And then you moved to London the same year, right?
Yeah, straight after. I basically got my diploma in June and I moved in July. Why did you want to move to London,
you know, rather than stay in Paris, for example?
So I used to live in London when I was growing up. I actually, you know, spent most of my life in London because I only came back to Paris when I was 14 and then I left again when I was 23. Mm-hmm. And so I always wanted to go back there. It's the city I was always really drawn to. I knew that in terms of work and creativity, there was it was quite an interesting city to be in. So I didn't really hesitate. I just, yeah, as soon as I got my diploma, I just left. And I was like, I'm just going to see how it goes. So, yeah, I did my first year. I did a few internships and sort of part-time jobs. Mm-hmm. And then after a year, I got a full-time job as an illustrator in a creative agency. And I stayed there for 2 years.
Yeah. Did you actually move to London with a plan to get internships, or did you move without any plans? And just kind of like,
I had absolutely no plans. I didn't even know what I wanted to do. So I didn't even know I wanted to be an illustrator.
Did you know you wanted to work in creative?
Yeah.
In a creative industry? Or,
yeah. That's the only thing I knew, is that I wanted to work in the creative industry. But I didn't know if I wanted to be like a graphic designer or an art director or an illustrator or like anything really. Because LESAG was really broad, like you had so many different types of classes, which was good because it made you try lots of different things, but it also sort of made me not focus on what I actually wanted to do. Yeah. So then when I arrived to London, my thinking was, I'm just going to try as many different work experiences and I'm going to see which one I actually enjoy.
Okay. So did you have an illustration portfolio from being in school? I imagine they did make you do a portfolio probably your final year.
Yeah, I did have a portfolio. I mean, it wasn't like an illustration portfolio. It was more of a broader, there was photography on there and there was, you know, like typography and illustration.
Photography too?
Yeah, photography. I was really into photography when I started. But then one of my photographic teacher really made me not like photography anymore. So then I went complete cold turkey as soon as I could. I had a portfolio, but it was very messy. You could tell I didn't know what I wanted to do from my portfolio.
Yeah. And so you applied for a few internships, and did you pick specific ones, or did you just, you wanted to try as many things as you could?
I was really targeting for the ones where like I liked their work and to be honest, I started with one and then each internship led to another internship because they knew someone who needed an intern. So like I really looked for one. My first one was with this designer called Andy Spencer, really cool designer. And so I worked with him for maybe, I think it was 2 months. And then he knew another company. So then I went with them and then they knew another company and then I went with them and then I got a full-time job.
Yeah. So you got a full-time job at a studio called Nice and Serious.
Yeah.
And what type of work did you do there?
So mainly illustration, a little bit of like graphic design and a tiny little bit of animation as well, but mainly illustrations. They're like they're a creative agency and they focus on sustainability, environmental and social issues. So they had like really cool projects and cool clients. Only thing is, and I think that's mainly what happens when you're in an agency as an illustrator, is that I had to fit in with the style that they wanted to pitch. So I was doing loads of different styles and that's something that quite quickly I realized was going to be an issue because at the same time I was trying to actually find my style and figure out how I wanted my portfolio to look like. And so there was a clash between what I was doing at work and what I was doing during my personal time, developing my style for my illustration portfolio. So yeah, it was a good experience. And I think like I would, re- I, I'm happy I've done it, because now that I'm freelancing, I think it would be very hard for me to go back to an agency. So I'm happy that I've done it already. And I had a bit of the experience of working with a team and, you know, seeing how they handle the their clients and how they handle their projects and their timelines and deadlines and everything. But yeah, I was quite happy to go freelance when after a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're in an agency, it's really, it's kind of confusing style-wise, because you have to, you have to adjust your style constantly.
Yeah, constantly. And you're like, if you're working on multiple projects, it's like, you'll really go from one thing to the other, and it has, yeah, it has nothing in common. And so you don't really feel, I felt like I couldn't be as creative as I wanted, which feels like frustrating, because I think people who come into the creative industry obviously is to be creative. So,
So at that point, did you start kind of understanding what your style was going to be like? Because I know you started out with a style that was very different from the style that you have now.
Yeah.
I think it was like kind of a little bit darker.
Almost. Oh my God. It was so creepy.
Yeah.
It was completely different. Like, it was the style I had when I was in high school, when I was at uni. And it was very like, yeah, very, very dark, very like almost only black and white, or really dark colors.
And kind of like it didn't look as digital. It looked a little bit more.
No. Yeah. It was all done like on paper. Yeah. It was just like, I was enjoying doing it, but like when I actually realized I wanted to really do illustrations, then I was like, okay, this style will never work with what I want to do, and it's not how I picture being an illustrator. So like throughout the 2 years at Nice and Serious, and then I was working all the time, like during my free time I was working on personal projects, and that sort of helped me develop my style more, so that when I went freelance, I actually had something that I was way more confident with, and felt like, yeah, would be a good thing to sell.
And that process probably wasn't linear.
I
mean, finding your style and understanding what you want to do is like, it's one of the toughest things in the beginning.
It's really complicated. For me, it was the biggest challenge that I had. It was to develop my style and it's definitely not linear. Like, you'll have loads of hits and miss. You sometimes you try something and you feel like you've nailed it, and then actually you look back and you're not happy with it anymore. Even now, I feel like it's still something that I constantly have to take care of.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like, oh my God, I'm really happy with everything I've done? It's just I have no problem with it. I wouldn't change anything. I don't feel like anyone ever feels like that.
No, I feel like there's definitely projects that I'm more happy with than others, but there's never something where I'm like, I'll constantly feel like it was great. Like, yeah. I think it gets a bit frustrating because I like it at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I'm like really happy with it. And then I look at it like 2 months, 3 months later, and I'm like, oh no, it doesn't work.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that, it's funny because that doesn't happen when you look at other people's stuff usually.
Oh yeah. It's for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's because you're I'm my worst feedback and client, because you're just so critical.
Yeah. And so I don't know, it's kind of interesting because on your website, you describe your style. You say that you want to create images that elicit a feeling of joy in people.
Yeah.
That invoke joy. And is that something you discovered while you were searching for your style? Is that something you articulated much later?
No, yeah, that was definitely something. It was sort of the base of my style, actually. Because whenever I was trying to work on my style, but without really any meaning to it, I felt like my illustrations were a bit blank. And so I really wanted to sort of understand what message I wanted to give as well, and what is it that I wanted to talk about. And that was going to be the base of my style. It was actually, yeah, I'm going to be using bright colors and, you know, flat shapes and represent the woman a lot. But also what I want to do with it is for people to feel confident and empowered and, you know, joyful when they look at my work. So that was really how I started doing my illustration the way I was doing it, was on that basis.
Yeah. And one of the things that I also saw you describe, I think it was in one of your talks, that you said that people called your style childish or maybe yeah. too childish in the beginning. And yeah. and you ended up doing something kind of smart in response to that, I thought.
Yeah. Well, I got a lot of that comment at the beginning, and I was finding it quite frustrating because I had really bright colors, and because my style was very happy and mm-hmm. and all of that. I was getting clients who were very wary of hiring me because they felt like it was looking too childish or too cute or too cartoony, which yeah, I don't mm-hmm. like that word at all. So I just decided, well, if that's what they think, then I'm just going to start being way less childish. And mm-hmm. That's when I really started focusing on women and the female body, and having actually my characters being naked and very like free and yeah. and quite playful and that actually really worked. I was really happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you weren't ever discouraged and thinking, oh yeah, maybe I can't have this style because it's too childish. Yeah.
No, I hate that people think that, you know, there's things that I can do and there's things that I can't do with my style. I feel like if I feel like I can do it that way, then I'll do it that way. And I'll prove that, you know, you don't have to put me in the category of childish illustrator or, you know.
Yeah.
So I always try to defy anyone who tries to put like too much labels on my style.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And I think the way you did it was pretty smart. Because and then also in the beginning, you were drawing much, like you were drawing these characters that were a little bit more like, maybe like a little bit more like fantasy based or almost like a quirky kind of like.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel like now I prefer, I still like to have a bit of like weirdness in like the characters, and I like to have some sort of surreal elements from time to time. But then my characters now are actually way more real and, you know, have, I think, also more attitude than before. Mm-hmm. And I think that also helps to show that your style can be, whilst it's joyful, it's also not necessarily just cute and friendly.
Yeah. And I think a lot of your work, it revolves around portraying people.
Yeah.
Which it's hard to do also. Just it's hard to find a way that you feel comfortable illustrating people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And it can very easily look commercial, which is also a struggle.
Yeah. But for you, did you start illustrating people really early on, or was it something that you like eventually worked out? Or
that was always pretty early on. Like even from my style in at uni, even though it was completely different, it was mainly character. It was focused on characters because I always was really inspired by you know, like people like Tim Burton's and having all these like really quirky characters. And I was always interested in representing characters in different ways. So that's always been what I've really enjoyed drawing the most.
Yeah. So back to the beginning, you went freelance and I imagine you started like beefing up your portfolio, putting more work in it and kind of consolidating it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I started by putting basically anything, almost anything that I would draw, I would put it on there.
Yeah.
And like 70% of the stuff that I had in there were personal work, but I didn't say that. I was just like, oh, you know, like a sort of packaging design. It's like, but it was for nothing. It was just like a project that I had made up. But just to make it look like, oh, to make people see that my work could be used in different ways. And then, you know, with time, I then took out a lot of stuff, and I'm really picky with what I put on my, well, actually I haven't launched my new version of my website, but I'm getting more and more picky of what I want to show, because mm-hmm. I really want to show things that I'm still happy with and proud of.
Yeah. So in the beginning, you just like put as much as possible in your portfolio.
Yeah.
Did you have a website, or was it?
I did, because luckily my boyfriend is a web designer. So he made my first website, and now every year or so he wants to redo it. And I'm like, okay.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Your website is nice too. It's like, it doesn't look like everybody else's website, which it's probably because you actually got a web designer to
make it. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really useful.
Very handy.
So then did you start sending your portfolio to art directors, or did you just kind of like post stuff online and hope that people would reach out to you?
Yeah, like a bottle in the sea. A bit of both. I had made a list of all the studios, agencies, magazine, anything that I can think of that I liked. And I contacted them all when I went freelance, just saying like, you know, hey, I'm here. This is my work. If you ever need an illustrator, I'm free. I'm free to work with. And then also,
did you get responses from that usually?
Well, I think out of like all the emails I sent, I probably got maybe half of them to reply to me, which is not that bad. And then but then like most of the replies were like, oh, you know, thanks for sending that over, but you know, we don't need anyone right now, but good luck. And then I think out of all of them, maybe I got one project, but I'm not even sure. But I do feel like I did. It was an important step to put yourself out there, because then, you know, then if they see my work somewhere else, then they will have seen it before, and you know, maybe feel a bit more reassured that I'm hireable. So I think it's an important step to make, even
so
if
it's almost like a not necessarily getting a job, but just
it's like an intro.
People be aware that you're there. Yeah,
yeah. It's just like showing what you're doing.
Yeah,
and then I posted a lot on. At the time, I was posting more like on Dribbble, Behance and Dribbble, and then mainly Instagram.
Hmm. Yeah. So, and then did you get a lot of work from there, from Dribbble or Behance?
Yeah, I got a couple of projects from Dribbble. Mm. And then I'm not sure I'm sure Instagram got me projects, because now it's like also like a big, when people contact me, they usually say they've seen my work on Instagram.
Yeah.
So I think maybe at the beginning also it would have helped, but you know, I don't have the certainty that I got a project from that, but
yeah,
I think it definitely helped that my work was out there.
Yeah. I don't know. Dribbble
Really
is more for like product designers, especially now.
The project that I got from Dribbble were mainly sticker packs.
Yeah. Yeah. And have you had a lot of success with Behance? Because I've had quite a few people on the show, which kind of surprised me. They kind of talked about getting projects from Behance.
Yeah, no, I don't. I didn't get a project from Behance directly, as in like I didn't get like a message on my inbox of someone contacting me on Behance. But one of my projects got featured, Ultimate Summer one, and I think that did help a lot, because that was the first time that I was getting a lot of views and a lot of comments and likes on a project. So I think that probably helped.
Yeah, no, that helps a lot. I mean, getting featured on Behance, actually, a lot of people on the show talked about how that can really kind of launch you.
Yeah, almost. It can really help you. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think that was definitely a good thing.
So the Ultimate Summer was one of your projects that you did, a personal project that you did to beef up your portfolio.
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So it was one of my first personal projects that I was actually happy with, because I was working on loads of different illustrations, but I wasn't really convinced with my style. And then when I worked on Ultimate Summer, it felt like that was the first time that I was doing something that was working.
And what was the concept for the project?
It was basically just illustrating moments that represents the summer. So I asked a few different friends on Facebook and, what it was about the summer that they loved and what was like the one thing that really made them think of summer, and they all gave me different answers. And then I just illustrated them in a really, like, I tried to be quite graphic on that one and not use a lot of colors, but use really bright colors. And then the result was just a series of, like, I think it was like 15 illustrations in total, and it like made into one big poster. And yeah, that was the first time also that I really pushed it and I shared it a lot, and I got loads of good responses, and I felt like, yeah, I felt like that was the beginning of my personal style started with that project.
Do you have a sense of why that project was so successful as opposed to maybe other personal projects you'd done in the past?
I think it was more modern than my previous work. And actually I think it was also less like childish, like they were saying. Like it was a bit bolder. And I think the people also I sent it to, and the online magazines and people I sent it to, it was like in the sort of the style at the time. So I think that's why it did well.
And people really like a project that has like a kind of like a concept and a story, series of something.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that was the first time that I had a concept that was a bit, you know, that sort of made sense and people could relate to. So yeah.
Did you do that on purpose? Did you kind of intend to make kind of like a collection of things that would be ultimately that would share pretty well, I guess, online?
Well, I wanted to do a series because I felt like it was definitely stronger and it would mean that I could share more of it and push it a bit more. But then the actual like theme of it, I just did it because that's what I was inspired by at the moment. I wasn't really thinking of doing something that, you know, that would do well. But so that's why I was so happy that people were reacting well to it.
Yeah, because a lot of the feedback I've heard from people about Behance is that to have a successful project, you kind of have to make it a series and something that people like those perform a lot better usually than other projects on Behance, and especially when you're new.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's definitely been part of the advice was to have a personal project that really is a collection of things that people.
Yeah.
And I think what you added that people can relate to is also important.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yes, series are usually stronger and it gives a better idea to people who don't know your work of what you actually do. Whereas if it's just one or two illustrations in like that one theme, I feel like maybe it's not enough for people to understand what you do.
Did you also do this when you were beefing up your portfolio? Were you also doing like, I know some people do this, but sometimes they kind of imagine working with a brand or working with a company, and it kind of, and sometimes I wonder if that's a good approach or not. I mean, I could see how it could be good for the brand to see how you would approach them and how you would treat their brand. But I also can see how it can feel maybe a little bit presumptuous or weird to do a fake project like that. I don't know. I'm not sure which side I fall on, but did you ever do that?
I'm a bit torn as well because I think it's as a motivation, it's good because you're like, okay, like because sometimes you can just feel like you're just illustrating and there's no meaning and you know, you're like, what am I doing, you know? But I tried to do it and actually it just if I really thought of it with all the like if I thought, oh, it's gonna be for like a cream and I'm doing the packaging of a new face cream, I actually felt like I had too many restraints and I in terms of creativity, I couldn't think of anything to do. So it sort of blocked me as well. So in the end, I would always do illustrations that are actually just going to be end up being like prints or posters. Because I felt like that was the only time where I wasn't feeling stuck.
Do you remember when you got your first big client?
Yeah.
I guess when you got your break where somebody reached out to you and said, you know, and that was like an exciting client, not just, you know,
not just
sometimes you get a little commission that is, you know, personal or somebody just wants a small illustration.
Yeah, definitely. For me, it was when I got that project to do a series of stickers for Google. It was also like it was a combination of things because it was for Google, but it was also for an agency that I really wanted to work with because it's an agency. It was used to called what was it called? INT. It was the sister branch of It's Nice That.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I really wanted to work with them. Now they're called Anyways. And so like the fact that they wanted to work with me and that it was for Google, I was really excited. And then the project went also really well. It was so smooth and everyone was happy with how it was going. So that was definitely the moment where I felt like it had gone really well and it was a big step for me to get a project like that.
How early on was that after you left your job?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think it was a year after.
Okay, yeah.
But it was really lucky basically because the only reason I got that is because another illustrator who they had contacted, because they were doing loads of different sets. So they had contacted this illustrator and they had said, you know, do you know anyone else who you think could do a good job? And he gave them my contact. Which I, you know, was really, really nice of him.
Yeah.
So it's also like, it was also a strike of luck because I don't think they would have necessarily known to contact me then.
Did you know him personally or?
He was at the same collective as mine and we had the same agent at some point, but then I think at that time I didn't have that agent yet.
So you knew each other though.
Yeah, yeah, we knew each other. Yeah, from the collective.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And so, you did that, and did that project go well? Because I know sometimes first projects can be a little tricky, especially when it's your first big client, or you're really nervous.
It went really well. I was definitely nervous, but the people from Anyways are really, really friendly. Everyone I've worked with. And so they were really trying to make the whole thing super comfortable and the brief was really open as well, which is rare. And I was surprised by that especially for like a big first project.
Really? Because I always imagine that commercial work is more open by nature.
Yeah, it depends. It depends. Sometimes, it really depends on.
Sometimes they have a specific piece that they want you to recreate or something.
Yeah,
like
sometimes
that.
They know exactly what they want you to draw. In this case, it was just like, oh, here's a phrase. Here's a theme for the stickers. And it was just like, I think it was bad negative phrases. That was it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, come up with three different routes, and then we'll choose which one and then do 24 stickers. But it was good. I was happy to have so much freedom.
Yeah, but it can also be scary in the beginning to have a lot of freedom, I think.
Yeah, I think I was just so excited to work on it that I just, in that case, it was sort of a good stress where I just felt like I just worked on it all the time and I was, you know, I was really wanting to do the best job possible. So in that case, I didn't get a bad stress from it.
Yeah. And so in the beginning, I imagine it would have, with a big brand like that approaching you in a big agency, it might have been kind of hard to negotiate and know exactly what to charge. Did you ever struggle with that in the beginning? Because you now have two agents, I think.
Yeah.
But back then, I imagine you didn't.
I had an agent, but he was a non-exclusive agent. So when I got that project, I got it. It was through me. So I wasn't with him. To be honest, at the beginning, I think, and it's a bad thing to do at the beginning, but I didn't even think of budget. I was just like, I just want the project.
Yeah. I think a lot of people think like that.
It's at the beginning, especially for like a big client, you're like, yeah, I just want it and I want to be able to share it. So, they had a set budget from the start. When they contacted me in the first email, they had their set budget for it. And also I was happy with it. So I just, there was no negotiation whatsoever. It was just like, yeah.
Yeah. And that's not usually how it happens, right?
No. Now it's just always like a sort of a game of who's going to say a number first. And yeah, I find that that was definitely the most complicated part of going freelance, is being comfortable and confident talking about money, which is something that I absolutely hated at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I used to, my boyfriend's completely different, and he's a designer as well, and he would read my email when I was quoting, and it was, there was like so many phrases before I say the number, because I was scared of saying the number. And he was like, this is ridiculous, just say you're doing 5 illustration and it's going to cost you X amount of money, and say and then say thank you, bye. And so,
well, I think men sometimes have a easier time with that. They're brought up to kind of
to learn like how that. Exactly. Definitely. And it did help a lot, because then I was just sending my emails, like closing my eyes, just like, oh my God, okay. and then eventually I was seeing that the responses weren't like, this is so expensive, like,
yeah,
and anything that you think of when you're sending it that they're going to reply, because you're freaking out. But yeah, when I saw that people were replying very reasonably, or just even if they didn't have the budget, they were very nice about it. And now it's something that I actually even enjoy.
Yeah, it's never a good thing to be too hesitant
or
give too many quotes or something like that.
Yeah, you don't want to go back and forth too many times. But it's a skill to learn, which I definitely didn't have at the beginning.
So I imagine you don't charge by the hour. I mean,
no,
a lot. Yeah. It's become increasingly very clear to people that that's the wrong way to freelance.
Yeah.
like there's been a lot of stuff written about it in the past few years that just charging hourly is just not going to be good for you.
No, because then they just like, they look at your quotes and they say, oh, but you still have 3 hours. So actually, could you do this other project? And you're like, well, no, I just work fast.
So you don't charge hourly, but so do you usually quote people a range, or do you just quote them a specific number, or do you have different, I know people who have different packages.
Well, what I usually do, I just give one number. I usually don't give a range. Because then I find it a bit strange, because then I feel like they're always going to just take the bottom of the range and say that's what they'll do it for.
But when you give a number, you might have a range in mind, right?
Yeah. So what I usually do is I'll split my quotes into two, and there'll be the production costs. So I give no indication of amount of hours or days. And then a licensing cost, and then this is where I can give different numbers, obviously, because depending on what they're looking for, if they want it worldwide, if they want it for a year or in perpetuity, or if they are going to print 1,000 products or more, etc. And then when I send that, I'll think of how, because usually they will negotiate, I'll think of how much lower I would go. And then if they come back and it's too low, I'll say, well, actually, no, I'm sorry. Like the lowest I would go would be for that. And I'll always give I'll always try and give a condition, like, well, okay, I can do it for less, but then I'm only going to do 3 illustrations, or then there's, very, very minor rounds of feedback. I don't want to just give like a lower number with no reasons.
Do you always quote specific numbers of rounds of exploration and revision?
Yeah. Yeah, because it can get really out of control.
How many do you typically do?
I usually say 2 rounds of feedback and then like one more of like very minor. So it'll be like, literally, can you just change the hair to pink and move her slightly to the right or something like that?
Yeah.
It'll be like something that won't take me long.
Yeah. And so do you lay all this out? Like, do you have a template for contracts usually, or do you just do this? All like you just do it per client?
Well, I mean, I'm doing most of my projects with my agents now, so they take care of that. But when I do it, I don't have a template or anything. I usually just write it in a sentence in the email, I that way I can always go back to it and quote back and say, well, I said that at the beginning, so any, if there's more changes, then now it's going to cost. But even if I don't, even if I didn't say it at the beginning, usually clients know when they're going too far in their feedback. And so when I say, oh, okay, well, that's fine, I can do it, but it will be extra. Most of the time they understand.
So you do say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be scary too, to say that.
Yeah, again, yeah, at the beginning, I would do way too many rounds of feedback, and like, it was not, and I wasn't being clear and everything, but it's definitely, you know, you learn, you make your mistakes and you learn.
Yeah, and usage rights are, of course, a big part of the price, and I think not a lot of people talk about it, but it's really important for illustrators, especially.
To know, yeah.
But I find that, and I don't know if this is wrong, but I've seen that lately a lot of brands will ask for usage rights in perpetuity by default. And it's especially if you're starting out and you don't know that should cost more.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit like almost predatory. And they target people with less experience and kind of ask for perpetuity usage rights. I don't know. Do you find that most people ask for usage rights in perpetuity by default?
Or? Yeah, I do actually. Yeah. But I do feel like that's changed, because a few years ago, I would say it was more common that they'd be asking for like a year or 6 months. And I think you're right. I think there is a bit of let's go with the highest licensing to start with, and people who have less experience will not understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
That will not know that should actually means that you're, you know, multiplying the price by 10.
Are they usually? Do you think people are usually prepared to pay more for that, or are they kind of trying it out to see if you'll?
I feel like there is also sometimes there is a bit of a lack of knowledge from the client part. Where they don't realize what that means, and that it should actually the price should be higher. But then I also think in a few cases it's just like them trying to see if you'll give in or not.
Yeah. So and so you're happy to give rights in perpetuity, but you expect to be compensated for them, which is just normal.
Yeah.
But and you say you usually charge 10 times more, which
I mean,
it depends on the size of the campaign as well.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Sort of like how many people you'll reach, what exactly they're doing with the illustrations, and it's really hard, because like there's not like a set rule. I will try to sort of follow the same way I do it for every project, but the fact is that there's always some sort of difference from one client to the next. And that's what makes it really hard for when you're starting up, is you really want to have like almost like an equation that you can use.
Yeah, but how did you develop your numbers? Did you get them from talking to people who work in the field, or talking with your agents, or just from experience?
I think my French agent was a big help for this, because she's really, really open about money, and you know, she'll share all the quotes that she would have sent, and she does a breakdown exactly with the licensing and the usage right and the production cost and everything. So because she was so open with me with it, I could have access to what she sends out. And, and I was, so that helped me a lot to understand numbers, because up until like for the first 2 years of freelancing, I would have never charged. I would have never even thought of charging as much as I can charge now on some projects that wants a lot of licensing. And then also, to be honest, there was a lot of completely winging it and seeing and going higher and higher and just seeing, well, does that work? Like it, and then and then trying it out like that as well.
Yeah, it's strange that illustration, much more than graphic design, I guess, people don't share.
Yeah.
People don't really share the fees. And I think maybe also agents are the best people to ask for that, because they really have a sense of how much people usually charge.
Yeah, exactly. And they have more of an understanding of how to break it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a weird thing. Like it's a bit, I feel like it's getting a bit better, but it is still quite taboo to say how much, between illustrators, to say how much a project costs. And like, I have a couple of friends who are like maybe more at the start point of their illustration career, and I like really make a point of saying how much a project cost and how much I charge, and for them to sort of see.
Yeah,
what to expect.
Yeah. So let's talk about your latest project with Nike. I think you did something with Nike.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really
recently.
Fun.
Yeah. So what was that like? What was?
Yeah, it was really cool. So it was, again, it was with the agency Anyways. And okay. They had Nike as a client, and they wanted me to do a series of illustrations for some patches that you would use to customize the kit of the French team for the Women World Cup.
Oh yeah, like when you go into like a Nike lab or something, yeah. And they customize a t-shirt or
yeah, yeah. Exactly. Okay. So that was really fun because...
So you got to create something physical again, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which I really enjoy. And it was, I had never done patches for a client before. So, and obviously it's for Nike, and it was for the Women World Cup. So like all mm-hmm. the elements were perfect. And the project was really, really fun. I enjoyed it a lot. And yeah, I went to Nike 1948, the shop that just opened they rebranded in Shoreditch. And so I went to see my patches, and it was a nice feeling. And I'm actually doing another project with Nike that I just finished, which is maybe maybe I'm not allowed to say until it's out, actually.
Oh, okay,
but,
that's okay.
Well, yeah, another project. Like, that's
we
cool.
won't get you into trouble. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, Nike is like a dream company for a lot of illustrators, creatives.
I think what I enjoyed the most about doing that is that. I like to represent women in a bit of a different way on that project and have it more focused on sports and athleticism and really putting a light on the fact that, you know, the women football is actually really great and that people should follow the Women World Cup as much as they follow the Men's World Cup. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really, it was nice because it felt also a bit different to what I usually do, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And to talk more about this kind of idea of representing women, you recently also had a solo show. It was your first solo show.
Yeah.
Called Nobody's Baby.
Yeah.
And it got quite a lot of press and attention. At least I think so. I mean, I saw it mentioned quite a lot. And it was based on a series of portraits of women.
Yeah.
They were often like nude in different settings. And can you tell me how did that project come about? Did it start with a narrative or an idea for it, or?
Yeah, well, it's sort of, it started because I had a French gallery in Paris who I often collaborate with, and she said that there was a spot for me to do a solo show. Early 2019, and that was like in. I think it was like in spring 2018. So it was way before.
So it started with like the goal of doing a show.
Yeah, the goal of doing a show. And I knew I had that spot. So I was like, okay, so now I have to come up with something. And I wanted to do a series that was more graphic, a bit more striped back and with a bit less details and still really putting women in the focus and doing this series of really strong, empowered women in their intimacy and in their personal world. And so I started working on some sketches, and it was a very frustrating time of the first 2 months where nothing I was doing was good enough because I had that stress and pressure of having to do it for a show. Obviously yeah. It's, you know, when you're doing a solo show, I feel like that was a really stressful time because, you know, it's the first time you're really putting your work out there and it's not behind a client or a project.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And it's more permanent than one illustration in a way.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and you want it to be impactful. You want it to be, like you said, you want it to be covered by magazines and people to talk about it. So it was a bit of a difficult process at the beginning.
Do you get feedback from the gallery usually in that case?
No. In that case, I only showed her when it was all done. I had the 20 illustration and I just sent it to her and she was just like, yeah, perfect. So. The project was really hard to start with at the beginning, and then I did one of the illustration and when I did that one in color, I was like, okay, this is good, this is what I want to do, so I could finish the whole series based on that first one.
What was the process for making the illustration? Did you paint them, or how did you do work?
So I was I sketched them all up, and then I was really trying to think of the space as well. So I printed all the sketches and I printed them in different scale. And I had my whole wall for like 2 months that was just filled with like a taped prints of some of the sketches. And then when I had like that, the sort of like the composition, I started the color, but I just did it all on the iPad. I did them all digitally.
On Procreate?
On Procreate. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I did the show in Paris, and at the same time I got another spot for an exhibition in London, and I knew we were going to go for like big scale prints, so then I also like took that into account for creating the artwork.
And do you usually work really digitally, like you work with Procreate all the time, or do you usually start with the sketch by hand, or?
So I do all the color versions on Procreate now. Mm. I do the sketches by hand because that's still a part that I like to do, really still on like using pen and paper.
So you don't sketch on Procreate?
No. I'll do a clean sketch on Procreate, but mm-hmm. I do the rough sketches on the notebooks. And then, yeah, like I do some painting. Well, it's more like it'll be like occasional for murals and
yeah,
customization of products. I like to do paintings, but what I'm trying to get more into is also like just having the work printed in like in different ways, with like screen printing and silk screen printing, and just trying to work to play a little bit more with how you can have the work made, and how to play around with like the varnish and the colors and the textures and everything.
Is that something that you're quite familiar with, like printing and?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm like, it's something that I'm interested in, and I like to try and find new ways of doing it, but I need to learn about it way more.
Yeah, especially if you want how you want your colors to come out, because
yeah,
printing the colors is like, it's tricky.
Yeah.
Do you usually vectorize your work or no?
No, usually not. No, because now I always do my artworks at a really big scale.
Yeah.
So then sometimes I'll vectorize them if I really need it in a much higher, much bigger scale. But usually it's okay.
So you're able to finish an artwork in Procreate.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know a lot of people who make the final version in Procreate. I know people who make like an intermediate version
or
sometimes sketch, but well, it really depends. I guess it really depends on what you do.
I think for my style, it's kind of like it's quite fitting because
yeah,
it's like it's really really flat colors, block colors, and so I don't need something very elaborate to be honest to do my work. I just need have a decent paintbrush tool, and then
But it can be hard to create like clean shapes in Procreate, or a little bit harder than if you were using Illustrator or something like that.
Yeah, I guess it's true. I never really got into Illustrator. I felt like anytime I tried to do it.
Well, looking at your work, I thought it was made in Illustrator in the beginning.
I know. Yeah. It's kind of a weird one because it probably saved me a lot of time to do it on Illustrator because. Like the shapes are quite easy to make and it would be nice and clean. But I always feel like I prefer the tiny imperfections you get from doing it on Procreate.
Yeah. And you don't really use Photoshop or anything like that?
So I used to before, but no, what I'll usually do is I'll do the... Because Procreate has a few bugs still, and there's things that make it a bit messy. Like if you move a shape you've done, it can blur it out sometimes. So what I usually do is any changes like that, I'll then send the file to my laptop and then I'll make the changes on Photoshop because Photoshop is way more elaborate.
You mean when you move a layer or something, it blurs it?
Yeah, I feel like if you rotate it, sometimes.
I haven't seen that. Yeah.
No, I don't know. Maybe it's my.
Oh, maybe if you rotate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't do that a lot. Yeah. Because I don't finalize artwork. I guess I don't pay attention to that as much.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like any changes like that now, I just make it
on
Photoshop.
Yeah. And it's quite easy to move from Procreate to Photoshop.
Yeah. 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 It's super. I find that's really good.
Yeah. So, we're almost running out of time, but I wanted to ask you a final question before we do like more rapid fire questions.
Sure.
And that's what advice would you give illustrators and other freelance creatives that are starting out today?
I would say that it can feel very hard to find your personal style and to get started, but everyone's there at the beginning. Everyone goes through the same sort of issues and I think just really try and do work that you enjoy doing and that you find is representative of what you want to do. And don't take it too seriously because it doesn't really help, even though it's tempting to stress out about what you do and the type of project that you work on. But I think try and have as much fun as possible. Do as many projects as you can. Because it really helps to define your style and to understand what you want to do with your
work.
You
mean even personal projects?
Yeah, personal projects. Like, I know it's kind of a hard one because obviously you don't get paid when you do personal projects. But from my experience, I got work from my personal projects. So in a way, I did get paid for my personal projects. So I would say like it is good to put some time in, to invest some time into yourself and to do some personal work that you're really happy with. Because then when you share it, then you might get work from it. And then that's how it all gets started at the beginning. So, yeah.
Do you also have anything to say about like dealing with in the beginning, not really feeling like anybody sees you or just dealing with rejection in general? Because I feel like that's something that illustrators have to deal with a lot.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's weird because it's such a personal, it's such a personal thing, illustration, and you feel like you do put a bit of yourself in your work. So every rejection feels very, very personal. But I used to really take it that way. I would really feel like sort of hurt by it. But I think you need to just really, as soon as you have a no, you're like, okay, that's done then. Let's move on to the next. And try not to look back, because if you start looking back, then you know it's going to make things much, much harder. So I think just always take a second and be like, okay, yeah, that really sucks. I wanted that project. That's fine. But then move on and you'll get the next one. And if not, you'll get the one after that. And it's
But how do you? Sometimes it can be hard to tell yourself that you can do it eventually.
Oh yeah. I mean, I still have that now. Like I still have moments of pure doubt of like where I put everything into consideration and I'm like, oh, maybe this isn't good anymore or things like that. You'll get that. I don't think it ever really goes away, but honestly, I think every single artist feels like that. Mm-hmm. So don't think that because it's the beginning, you know, the struggles you have there, we all have them, and it's normal to doubt and it's normal to feel sometimes a bit low, and don't, you know, stop yourself from feeling like that. But also know that everyone then gets a break, and sometimes it goes well and sometimes it doesn't. And you have to keep trying and you have to keep working.
Yeah.
And you'll get there.
Yeah. Thank you. That's great. Nice. Yeah. So I'd like to ask you a few rapid fire questions. They were just like really simple questions, but to get to know you in a different way, I guess.
Okay.
So do you listen to podcasts?
Yeah, I do actually.
Okay. Can you share some of your favorite?
Yeah. I listen to This American Life.
Oh, okay.
Which I Classic. Enjoy. Yeah. Yeah. And then I also listen to a French podcast. It's a bit rude, so I apologize. It's called Les Couilles sur la table.
Which means balls on the table. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's really good, and I really enjoy it, and I find it very interesting. So
is
I would
it,
recommend.
Was it like a what is it? Is it just
it's like
news
it's like or? A no? It's like it's like a feminist podcast, and
okay,
it's
okay.
It'll talk about a specific issue, but in quite a fun way.
That's cool. I've never heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's good.
Okay. Do you have books that you recommend to other creatives?
Alors, weirdly enough, I actually have almost no like art books or like art magazines. For some reason, I don't know, I think because I just look at art on either in galleries or like on Instagram. So like I actually don't have any like art magazines or art books. I can recommend the Kindle book that I've read recently, but
are you inspired? Who inspires you, I guess, today or?
There's like the classic sort of painters and illustrators that really inspired me at the beginning, like Malika Favre, Para, mm-hmm. Photographers like Helmut Newton and Man Ray are really like have really been like what I was looking up, who I was looking up to at the beginning of my illustration work. But then like I always find new people on Instagram that are really cool on a daily basis.
Is that mostly what you use for inspiration?
Yeah. And like trying to go to a lot of exhibitions and seeing what's new, what's out there.
Yeah. What's your favorite place to eat in London?
Ooh, the hard one. Actually, there's a Japanese place just literally 1 minute away from my flat. I think it's called Nanashi. And it's really, really, really good. But I love Japanese food, so it'll be anything that's Japanese.
I love Japanese food too. Yeah. What's your favorite gallery or museum in London that you like to go to?
I love Tate Modern, just because I love the architecture of it. So even not to go see an exhibition, just to walk around. I love it.
Yeah. And I was recently in London. I really liked, I went to see the Barbican. And
oh, yeah.
And that super was really cool. Fun.
Yeah, really cool.
It's a really weird place.
It's very strange. I used to really hate it. And then I went from hating it to loving it.
Yeah, it's weird, but it's kind of amazing. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It's an odd one.
Yeah. Do you have dream clients that you would like to work with that you haven't yet?
I guess it's not so much dream clients, but dream projects. Like I would really love to do a higher scale project where I have maybe like a building or like a huge room that could be filled with my artwork.
Do you have a lot of experience painting murals or?
I've done a few. So I have a bit of experience with it and I really enjoy it, but they've always been limited in sort of the size of them. I would love to have an experience of doing something much bigger.
Yeah. And I saw recently at your exhibition, you had a sculpture, a 3D object that was one of your women. Is that something you would like to do more of too?
Yeah. I would love to do more of them. They're exhibited in a week in a hotel in London. And I'd love to do more of these. And again, higher scale of those.
Yeah.
Would be really fun.
Like bigger. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to do more exhibitions?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I would love to have it, you know, right now I would say that my client project takes me 75% of my time and then I have 25% of time doing, you know, personal work. But ideally in the future, I would love to focus more into creating artwork that are for an exhibition, doing solo shows and also just like playing around a bit more with printing my work and having it done in like different ways and give a bit more attention to my personal work.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe do projects. Yeah. Do projects for yourself that you haven't had time to do.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's also like for an illustrator. I mean, that's my view on it, but I don't know if it's true, but I feel like, you know, I don't think I can be an illustrator my whole life. I think either then it goes into being more of like an art director.
Really?
And then, well, either that or more towards the artist route, where actually you do focus more on doing personal projects and selling
and
your work
online.
And
so make a living off of of printing and
off of your and prints so. And products. Yeah.
It's really hard to do that though. Yeah.
It's super hard. Yeah. So I'm trying to like sort of slowly do it and use a bit more time every time to work on that part. But it's also such a different world because, mm-hmm. you know, it's more like galleries and
or you could do like more like, you know, Mr. Bingo.
Yeah. I know his work. Yeah.
He's very successful with it, but he doesn't work with galleries in the classical
sense. Yeah,
that's
true. Actually,
he kind of
true.
Does stuff like crowdfunded. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. But it's definitely something I'd love to go into more.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this was great. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
No worries at all. It was really nice to do this. So thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And that was my interview with Mary Lou Four. As always, please remember to leave a rating or review on iTunes if you can. It really helps the podcast. And check out Mary Lou's stuff. I've listed that in the show notes below. Show her some love on social media. And I will see you next week on the Illustration Hour with a very, very special guest. I will be interviewing the French illustrator, Thibaut Herem, who does these wonderful, wonderful detailed architectural drawings. His work is amazing and you should check it out. Until then, have a good and creative week and keep going.